he said. "Do you think that if you took a very fast run at it, you could jump clear over Hyde Park Corner, over the arch, and over the horse and rider, and land on the pavement the other side?"
"Easy," the BFG said.
"You're sure? You're absolutely sure?"
"I promise," the BFG said.
"Whatever you do, you mustn't land in the middle of Hyde Park Corner."
"Don't get so flushed," the BFG said.
"To me, that is a snitchy little jump. There's not a thing-a-ling-a-ling to it."
"Then go," Sophie whispered. The BFG broke into a full gallop. He went scorching across the park, and just before he reached the railings that divided it from the street, he took off. It was a gigantic leap. He flew high over Hyde Park Corner and landed as softly as a cat on the pavement the other side.
"Well done," Sophie whispered. "Now quick, over that wall."
Directly in front of them, bordering the pavement, there was a brick wall with fearsome-looking spikes all along the top of it. A swift crouch, a little leap, and the BFG was over it.
"We're there," Sophie whispered excitedly. "We're in the Queen's back garden."
Whispered the big friendly giant. "Is this really it?"
"There's the palace," Sophie whispered back.
Not more than 100 yards away, through the tall trees in the garden, across the mown lawns and the tidy flower beds, the massive shape of the palace itself loomed through the darkness. It was made of whitish stone. The sheer size of it staggered the BFG.
"But this place is having 100 bedrooms at least," he said.
"Easily, I should think," Sophie whispered.
"Then I is boggled," the BFG said. "How is I possibly finding the one where the Queen is sleeping?"
"Let's go a bit closer and have a look," Sophie whispered. The BFG glided forward among the trees. Suddenly, he stopped dead. The great ear in which Sophie was sitting began to swivel round.
"Hey," Sophie whispered, "you're going to tip me out."
"Shh," the BFG whispered back. "I is hearing something."
He stopped behind a clump of bushes. He waited. The ear was still swinging this way and that. Sophie had to hang on tight to the side of it to save herself from tumbling out. The BFG pointed through a gap in the bushes, and there, not more than 50 yards away, she saw a man padding softly across the lawn. He had a guard dog with him on a leash. The BFG stayed as still as a stone. So did Sophie. The man and the dog walked on and disappeared into the darkness.
"You was telling me there's no soldiers in the back garden," the BFG whispered.
"He wasn't a soldier," Sophie whispered. "He was some sort of a watchman. We'll have to be careful."
"I is not too worried," the BFG said. "These waxy big ears of mine is picking up even the noise of a man breathing in the other side of this garden."
"How much longer before it begins to get light?"
Sophie whispered.
"Very sure," the BFG said. "We must go pell-mell for leather now."
He glided forward through the vast garden, and once again Sophie noticed how he seemed to melt into the shadows wherever he went. His feet made no sound at all, even when he was walking on gravel. Suddenly, they were right up close against the back wall of the great palace. The BFG's head was level with the upper windows one flight up, and Sophie, sitting in his ear, had the same view. In all the windows on that floor, the curtains seemed to be drawn. There were no lights showing anywhere. In the distance, they could hear the muted sound of traffic going round Hyde Park Corner. The BFG stopped and put his other ear, the one Sophie wasn't sitting in, close to the first window.
"No," he whispered. "What are you listening for?"
Sophie whispered back.
"The breathing," the BFG whispered. "I is able to tell if it's a man, human being, or a lady by the breathing voice.
We has a man in there, snortling a little bit too.
He glided on, flattening his tall, thin, black-cloaked body against the side of the building. He came to the next window. He listened.
No, he whispered. He moved on. This room is empty, he whispered.
He listened in at several more windows, but at each one he shook his head and moved on. When he came to the window in the very center of the palace, he listened, but did not move on.
Oh, ho, oh, he whispered. We has a lady sleeping in there.
Sophie felt a little quiver go running down her spine.
But oh,
she whispered back. The BFG put a finger to his lips for silence. He reached up through the open window and parted the curtains ever so slightly. The orange glow from the night sky over London crept into the room and cast a glimmer of light onto its walls. It was a large room, a lovely room, a rich carpet, gilded chairs, a dressing table, a bed, and on the pillow of the bed lay the head of a sleeping woman. Sophie suddenly found herself looking at a face she had seen on stamps and coins and in the newspapers all her life. For a few seconds, she was speechless.
Is that her? The BFG whispered.
Yes,
Sophie whispered back. The BFG wasted no time. First, and very carefully, he started to raise the lower half of the large window. The BFG was an expert on windows. He had opened thousands of them over the years to blow his dreams into children's bedrooms. Some windows got stuck. Some were wobbly. Some creaked. He was pleased to find that the Queen's window slid upward like silk. He pushed up the lower half as far as it would go, so as to leave a place on the sill for Sophie to sit. Next, he closed the crack in the curtains. Then, with finger and thumb, he lifted Sophie out of his ear and placed her on the window ledge with her legs dangling just inside the room, but behind the curtains.
Now don't you go tip-toppling backwards, the BFG whispered. You must always be holding on tight with both hands to the inside of the windowsill.
Sophie did as he said. It was summertime in London, and the night was not cold, but don't forget that Sophie was wearing only her thin nightie. She would have given anything for a dressing gown, not just to keep her warm, but to hide the whiteness of her nightie from watchful eyes in the garden below. The BFG was taking the glass jar from the pocket of his cloak. He unscrewed the lid. Now, very cautiously, he poured the precious dream into the wide end of his trumpet. He steered the trumpet through the curtains, far into the room, aiming it at the place where he knew the bed to be. He took a deep breath. He puffed out his cheeks and he blew. Now he was withdrawing the trumpet, sliding it out very, very carefully, like a thermometer.
Is you all right sitting there? He whispered.
Yes,
Sophie murmured. She was quite terrified, but determined not to show it. She looked down over her shoulder. The ground seemed miles away. It was a nasty drop.
How long will the dream take to work?
Sophie whispered.
Some takes an hour, the BFG whispered back. Some is quicker, some is slower still, but it is sure to find her in the end.
Sophie said nothing.
I is going off to wait in the garden, the BFG whispered. When you is wanting me, just call out my name, and I is coming very quick. Will you hear me?
Sophie whispered.
You is forgetting these,
the BFG whispered, smiling and pointing to his great ears.
Goodbye,
Sophie whispered. Suddenly, unexpectedly, the BFG leaned forward and kissed her gently on the cheek. Sophie felt like crying. When she turned to look at him, he was already gone. He had simply melted away into the dark garden. The Queen. Dawn came at last, and the rim of a lemon-coloured sun rose up behind the rooftop somewhere behind Victoria Station. A while later, Sophie felt a little of its warmth on her back and was grateful. In the distance, She heard a church clock striking. She counted the strikes. There were 7. She found it almost impossible to believe that she, Sophie, a little orphan of no real importance in the world, was at this moment actually sitting high above the ground on the windowsill of the Queen of England's bedroom, with the Queen herself asleep in there behind the curtain, not more than 5 yards away. The very idea of it was absurd. No one had ever done such a thing before. It was a terrifying thing to be doing. What would happen if the dream didn't work? No one, least of all the Queen, would believe a word of her story. It seemed possible that nobody had ever woken up to find a small child sitting behind the curtains on his or her windowsill. The Queen was bound to get a shock. Who wouldn't? With all the patience of a small girl who is something important to wait for, Sophie sat motionless on the windowsill. How much longer? She wondered. What time do queens wake up? Faint stirrings and distant sounds came to her from deep inside the belly of the palace. Then, all at once, beyond the curtains, she heard the voice of the sleeper in the bedroom. It was a slightly blurred sleep-talker's voice.
"Oh, no!" it cried out. "No, don't! Oh, someone stop them! Don't let them do it! I can't bear it! Oh! Oh, oh, please stop them. It's horrible. Oh, it's ghastly. No, no, no.
She's having the dream, Sophie told herself. It must be really horrid. Oh, I feel so sorry for her, but it has to be done. After that, there were a few moans. Then there was a long silence. Sophie waited. She looked over her shoulder. She was terrified that she would see the man with the dog down in the garden staring up at her. But the garden was deserted. A pale summer mist hung over it like smoke. It was an enormous garden, very beautiful, with a large, funny-shaped lake at the far end. There was an island in the lake, and there were ducks swimming on the water. Inside the room, beyond the curtains, Sophie suddenly heard what was obviously a knock on the door. She heard the doorknob being turned. She heard someone entering the room.
"Good morning, Your Majesty,"
a woman was saying. It was the voice of an oldish person. There was a pause, and then a slight rattle of china and silver.
"Will you have your tray on the bed, ma'am, or on the table?"
"Oh, Mary, something awful has just happened."
This was a voice Sophie had heard many times on radio and television, especially on Christmas Day. It was a very well-known voice.
"Whatever is it, ma'am?
I've just had the most frightful dream. It was a nightmare. It was awful."
"Oh, I'm so sorry, ma'am, but don't be distressed. You're awake now and it will go away. It was only a dream, ma'am."
"Do you know what I dreamed, Mary? I dreamed that girls and boys were being snatched out of their beds at boarding school and were being eaten by the most ghastly giants. The giants were putting their arms in through the dormitory windows and plucking the children out with their fingers, one lot from a girls' school and another from a boys' school. It was all so, so vivid. Mary, it was so real."
There was a silence. Sophie waited. She was quivering with excitement. But why the silence? Why didn't the other one, the maid, why didn't she say something?
"What on earth's the matter, Mary?"
the famous voice was saying. There was another silence.
"Mary, you've gone white as a sheet. Are you feeling ill?"
There was suddenly a crash and a clatter of crockery, which could only have meant that the tray the maid was carrying had fallen out of her hands.
"Mary," the famous voice was saying rather sharply, "I think you'd better sit down at once. You look as though you're going to faint. You really mustn't take it so hard, just because I've had an awful dream."
That isn't the reason, ma'am."
The maid's voice was quivering terribly.
"Then, for heaven's sake, what is the reason?"
"I'm very sorry about the tray, ma'am.
Oh, don't worry about the tray. But what on earth was it that made you drop it? Why did you go white as a ghost all of a sudden?
You haven't seen the papers yet, have you, ma'am?
No. What do they say?
Sophie heard the rustling of a newspaper as it was being handed over.
It's like the very dream you had in the night, ma'am. Rubbish! Mary, where is it? On the front page, ma'am. It's the big headlines. Great Scott!
Cried the famous voice.
18 girls vanish mysteriously from their beds at Rodian School. 14 boys disappear from Eton. Bones are found underneath dormitory windows.
Then there was a pause, punctuated by gasps from the famous voice, as the newspaper article was clearly being read and digested.
Oh, how ghastly,
the famous voice cried out.
It's absolutely frightful. Bones under the windows. What can have happened? Oh, those poor children.
But, ma'am, don't you see, ma'am? See what, Mary? Those children were taken away almost exactly as you dreamed it, ma'am.
Not by giants, Mary.
No, ma'am, but the bit about the girls and boys disappearing from their dormitories, you dreamed it so clearly, and then it actually happened. That's why I came over all queer, ma'am.
I'm coming over a bit queer myself, Mary. Gives me the shakes, ma'am. When something like that happens, it really does. I don't blame you, Mary. I shall get you some more breakfast, ma'am, and have this mess cleared up. No, don't go, Mary. Stay here a moment.
Sophie wished she could see into the room, but she didn't dare touch the curtains. The famous voice began speaking again.
I really did dream about those children, Mary. It was clear as crystal.
I know you did, ma'am.
I don't know how giants got into it. That was rubbish.
Shall I draw the curtains, ma'am? Then we shall all feel better. It's a lovely day.
Please do.
With a swish, the great curtains were pulled aside. The maid screamed.
Ah!
Sophie froze to the window ledge. The Queen, sitting up in her bed with the Times on her lap, glanced up sharply. Now it was her turn to freeze. She didn't scream as the maid had done. Queens are too self-controlled for that. She simply sat there, staring wide-eyed and white-faced at the small girl who was perched on her windowsill in a nightie. Sophie was petrified. Curiously enough, the Queen looked petrified too. One would have expected her to look surprised, as you or I would have done, had we discovered a small girl sitting on our windowsill first thing in the morning. But the Queen didn't look surprised. She looked genuinely frightened. The maid, a middle-aged woman with a funny cap on the top of her head, was the first to recover.
"What in the name of heaven do you think you're doing in here?"
she shouted angrily to Sophie. Sophie looked beseechingly towards the Queen for help. The Queen was still staring at Sophie. Gaping at her would be more accurate. Her mouth was slightly open. Her eyes were round and wide as two saucers, and the whole of that famous, rather lovely face was filled with disbelief.
"Now listen here, young lady. How on earth did you get into this room?"
the maid shouted furiously.
I don't believe it," the Queen was murmuring. "I simply don't believe it."
"I'll take her out, ma'am, at once," the maid was saying.
"No, Mary, no, don't do that."
The Queen spoke so sharply that the maid was quite taken aback. She turned and stared at the Queen. What on earth had come over her? It looked as though she was in a state of shock.
"Are you all right, ma'am?"
the maid was saying. When the Queen spoke again, it was in a strange, strangled sort of whisper.
"Tell me, Mary," she said. "Tell me quite truthfully. Is there really a little girl sitting on my windowsill, or am I still dreaming?"
"She is sitting there all right, ma'am, as clear as daylight,"
But heaven knows how she got there. Your Majesty is certainly not dreaming it this time.
But that's exactly what I did dream, the Queen cried out. I dreamed that as well. I dreamed there would be a little girl sitting on my windowsill in her nightie, and she would talk to me.
The maid, with her hands clasped across her starched white bosom, was staring at her mistress with a look of absolute disbelief on her face. The situation was getting beyond her. She was lost. She had not been trained to cope with this kind of madness.
Are you real?
The Queen said to Sophie.
Yes, Your Majesty, Sophie murmured. What is your name?
Sophie, Your Majesty.
And how did you get up onto my windowsill? No, don't answer that. Hang on a moment. I dreamed that part of it too. I dreamed that a giant put you there.
He did, Your Majesty, Sophie said. The maid gave a howl of anguish and clasped her hands over her face.
Control yourself, Mary,
the Queen said sharply. Then to Sophie she said,
You are not serious about the giant, are you?
Oh, yes, Your Majesty. He's out there in the garden now.
Is he indeed?
The Queen said. The sheer absurdity of it all was helping her to regain her composure.
So, he's in the garden, is he?
She said, smiling a little. He's a good giant, Your Majesty, Sophie said. You need not be frightened of him.
I am delighted to hear it, said the Queen, still smiling.
He's my best friend, Your Majesty.
How nice,
the Queen said. He's a lovely giant, Your Majesty.
I'm quite sure he is, the Queen said. But why have you and this giant come to see me?
I think you have dreamed that part of it too, Your Majesty, Sophie said calmly. That pulled the Queen up short. It took the smile right off her face. She certainly had dreamed that part of it. She was remembering now how, at the end of her dream, it had said that a little girl and a big friendly giant would come and show her how to find the 9 horrible man-eating giants.
But be careful, the Queen told herself. Keep very calm, because this is surely not very far from the place where madness begins.
You did dream that, didn't you, Your Majesty? Sophie said. The maid was out of it now. She just stood there, goggling.
Yes, the Queen murmured. Yes, now you come to mention it. I did. But how do you know what I dreamed?
Oh, that's a long story, Your Majesty, Sophie said. Would you like me to call the big friendly giant? The Queen looked at the child. The child looked straight back at the Queen, her face open and quite serious. The Queen simply didn't know what to make of it. Was someone pulling her leg, she wondered. Shall I call him for you? Sophie went on. You'll like him very much. The Queen took a deep breath. She was glad no one except her faithful old Mary was here to see what was going on.
Very well, she said. You may call your giant. No, wait a moment. Mary, pull yourself together and give me my dressing gown and slippers.
The maid did as she was told. The Queen got out of bed and put on a pale pink dressing gown and slippers.
You may call him in now, the Queen said.
Sophie turned her head towards the garden and called out,
BFG, Her Majesty the Queen would like to see you.
The Queen crossed over to the window and stood beside Sophie.
Come down off that ledge, she said. You're going to fall backwards any moment.
Sophie jumped down into the room and stood beside the Queen at the open window. Mary, the maid, stood behind them. Her hands were now planted firmly on her hips, and there was a look on her face which seemed to say,
I want no part of this fiasco.
I don't see any giant, the Queen said.
Please wait, Sophie said.
Shall I take her away now, ma'am? The maid said.
Take her downstairs and give her some breakfast, the Queen said.
Just then, there was a rustle in the bushes beside the lake. Then out he came, 24 feet tall, wearing his black cloak with the grace of a nobleman. Still carrying his long trumpet in one hand, he strode magnificently across the palace lawn towards the window. The maid screamed. The Queen gasped. Sophie waved. The BFG took his time. He was very dignified in his approach. When he was close to the window, where the three of them were standing, he stopped and made a slow, graceful bow. His head, after he had straightened up again, was almost exactly level with the watchers at the window.
"Your Magister," he said, "I is your humbug servant."
He bowed again. Considering she was meeting a giant for the first time in her life, the Queen remained astonishingly self-composed.
"We are very pleased to meet you," she said.
Down below, a gardener was coming across the lawn with a wheelbarrow. He caught sight of the BFG's legs over to his left. His gaze travelled slowly upwards along the entire height of the enormous body. He gripped the handles of the wheelbarrow. He swayed. He tottered. Then he keeled over on the grass in a dead faint. Nobody noticed him.
"Oh, Magister," cried the BFG. "Oh, Queen. Oh, Monarcher. Oh, Golden Sovereign. Oh, Ruler. Oh, Ruler of Straight Lines. Oh, Sultana. I is come here with my little friend Sophie to give you a,
The BFG hesitated, searching for the word.
"To give me what?" the Queen said.
"Assistance," the BFG said, beaming. The Queen looked puzzled. "He sometimes speaks a bit funny, Your Majesty," Sophie said. "He never went to school."
"Then we must send him to school," the Queen said. "We have some very good schools in this country."
"I have great secrets to tell Your Majesty," the BFG said.
"I should be delighted to hear them," the Queen said, "but not in my dressing gown."
"Shall you wish to get dressed, ma'am?" the maid said.
"Have either of you had breakfast?" the Queen said.
"How could we?" Sophie cried. "Oh, please, I haven't eaten a thing since yesterday."
"I was about to have mine," the Queen said, "but Mary dropped it."
The maid gulped.
"I imagine we have more food in the palace," the Queen said, speaking to the BFG. "Perhaps you and your little friend would care to join me."
"Will it be repulsant snozcumbers, Magister?" the BFG asked.
"Will it be what?" the Queen said.
"Stinky snozcumbers," the BFG said.
"What is he talking about?" the Queen said. "It sounds like a rude word to me."
She turned to the maid and said,
"Mary, ask them to serve breakfast for three in the, I think it had better be in the ballroom. That has the highest ceiling."
To the BFG, she said,
"I'm afraid you will have to go through the door on your hands and knees, as we'll send someone to show the way."
The BFG reached up and lifted Sophie out of the windowsill.
"You and I is leaving Her Magister alone to get dressed," he said.
"No, leave the little girl here with me," the Queen said. "We'll have to find something for her to put on. She can't have breakfast in her nightie."
The BFG returned Sophie to the bedroom.
"Can we have sausages, Your Majesty?" Sophie said.
"And bacon and fried eggs." "I think that might be managed," the Queen answered, smiling.
"Just you wait till you taste it," Sophie said to the BFG. "No more snozcumbers from now on."
The Royal Breakfast. There was a frantic scurry among the palace servants when orders were received from the Queen that a 24-foot giant must be seated with Her Majesty in the great ballroom within the next half hour. The butler, an imposing personage named Mr. Tibbs, was in supreme command of all the palace servants, and he did the best he could in the short time available. A man does not rise to become the Queen's butler unless he is gifted with extraordinary ingenuity, adaptability, versatility, dexterity, cunning, sophistication, sagacity, discretion, and a host of other talents that neither you nor I possess. Mr. Tibbs had them all. He was in the butler's pantry, sipping an early morning glass of light ale when the order reached him. In a split second, he had made the following calculations in his head. If a normal 6-foot man requires a 3-foot high table to eat off, a 24-foot giant will require a 12-foot high table. And if a 6-foot man requires a chair with a 2-foot high seat, a 24-foot giant will require a chair with an 8-foot high seat. Everything, Mr. Tibbs told himself, must be multiplied by 4. 2 breakfast eggs must become 8. 4 rashers of bacon must become 16. 3 pieces of toast must become 12, and so on. These calculations about food were immediately passed on to Monsieur Papillon, the royal chef. Mr. Tibbs skimmed into the ballroom. Butlers don't walk, they skim over the ground, followed by a whole army of footmen. The footmen all wore knee breeches, and every one of them displayed beautifully rounded calves and ankles. There is no way you can become a royal footman unless you have a well-turned ankle. It is the first thing they look at when you are interviewed.
"Push the grand piano into the centre of the room," Mr. Tibbs whispered. Butlers never raise their voices above the softest whisper. 4 footmen moved the piano. "Now fetch a large chest of drawers and put it on top of the piano," Mr. Tibbs whispered. 3 other footmen fetched a very fine Chippendale mahogany chest of drawers and placed it on top of the piano. "That will be his chair," Mr. Tibbs whispered. "It is exactly 8 feet off the ground. Now we shall make a table upon which this gentleman may eat his breakfast in comfort. Fetch me 4 very large grandfather clocks. There are plenty of them around the palace. Let each clock be 12 feet high."
16 footmen spread out around the palace to find the clocks. They were not easy to carry and required 4 footmen to each one.
"Place the 4 clocks in a rectangle 8 feet by 4 alongside the grand piano," Mr. Tibbs whispered. The footman did so. "Now fetch me the young prince's ping-pong table," Mr. Tibbs whispered.
The ping-pong table was carried in.
"Unscrew its legs and take them away," Mr. Tibbs whispered. This was done. "Now place the ping-pong table on top of the 4 grandfather clocks," Mr. Tibbs whispered.
To manage this, the footman had to stand on stepladders. Mr. Tibbs stood back to survey the new furniture.
"None of it is in the classic style," he whispered, "but it will have to do."
He gave orders that a damask tablecloth should be draped over the ping-pong table, and in the end it looked really quite elegant after all. At this point, Mr. Tibbs was seen to hesitate. The footmen all stared at him, aghast. Butlers never hesitate, not even when they are faced with the most impossible problems. It is their job to be totally decisive at all times.
"Knives and forks and spoons," Mr. Tibbs was heard to mutter. "Her cutlery will be like little pins in his hands."
But Mr. Tibbs didn't hesitate for long.
"Tell the head gardener," he whispered, "that I require immediately a brand new unused garden fork and also a spade, and for a knife we shall use the great sword hanging on the wall in the morning room. But clean the sword well first. It was last used to cut off the head of King Charles I, and there may still be a little dried blood on the blade."
When all this had been accomplished, Mr. Tibbs stood near the centre of the ballroom, casting his expert butler's eye over the scene. Had he forgotten anything? He certainly had. What about a coffee cup for the large gentleman?
"Fetch me," he whispered, "the biggest jug you can find in the kitchen."
A splendid 1-gallon porcelain water jug was brought in and placed on the giant's table beside the garden fork and the garden spade and the great sword. So much for the giant. Mr. Tibbs then had the footman move a small delicate table and 2 chairs alongside the giant's table. This was for the Queen and for Sophie. The fact that the giant's table and chair towered far above the smaller table simply could not be helped. All these arrangements were only just completed when the Queen, now fully dressed in a trim skirt and cashmere cardigan, entered the ballroom holding Sophie by the hand. A pretty blue dress that had once belonged to one of the princesses had been found for Sophie, and to make her look prettier still, the Queen had picked up a superb sapphire brooch from her dressing table and had pinned it onto the left side of Sophie's chest. The big friendly giant followed behind them, but he had an awful job getting through the door. He had to squeeze himself through on his hands and knees, with 2 footmen pushing him from behind and 2 pulling from the front. But he got through in the end. He had removed his black cloak and got rid of his trumpet, and was now wearing his ordinary simple clothes. As he walked across the ballroom, he had to stoop quite a lot to avoid hitting the ceiling. Because of this, he failed to notice an enormous crystal chandelier. Crash! Went his head right into the chandelier. A shower of glass fell upon the poor BFG.
Gunghammers and Bogswinkles, he cried. What was that?
It was Louis XV, the Queen said, looking slightly put out.
He's never been in a house before, Sophie said. Mr. Tibbs scowled. He directed four footmen to clear up the mess. Then, with a disdainful little wave of the hand, he indicated to the giant that he should seat himself on top of the chest of drawers on top of the grand piano.
"What a fizz-whizzing, flush-bunking seat!" cried the BFG. "I is going to be buggers a-snug in a rug up here."
"Does you always speak like that?"
the Queen asked. "Quite often," Sophie said. "He gets tangled up with his words." The BFG sat down on the chest of drawers piano and gazed in wonder around the great ballroom.
"By gumdrops!" he cried. "What a spiffling wopsy room we is in! It is so gigantuous, I is needing bicirculars and telescopes to see what is going on at the other end!"
Footmen arrived carrying silver trays with fried eggs, bacon, sausages, and fried potatoes. At this point, Mr. Tibbs suddenly realized that in order to serve the BFG at his 12-foot-high grandfather clock table, he would have to climb to the top of one of the tall stepladders. What's more, he must do it balancing a huge warm plate on the palm of one hand and holding a gigantic silver coffee pot in the other. A normal man would have flinched at the thought of it, but good butlers never flinch. Up he went, up and up and up, while the Queen and Sophie watched him with great interest. It is possible they were both secretly hoping he would lose his balance and go crashing to the floor. But good butlers never crash. At the top of the ladder, Mr. Tibbs, balancing like an acrobat, poured the BFG's coffee and placed the enormous plate before him. On the plate there were 8 eggs, 12 sausages, 16 rashers of bacon, and a heap of fried potatoes.
"What is this, please, your magister?" the BFG asked, peering down at the Queen.
"He has never eaten anything except snozcumbers before in his life," Sophie explained. "They taste revolting."
"They don't seem to have stunted his growth," the Queen said.
The BFG grabbed the garden spade and scooped up all the eggs, sausages, bacon and potatoes in one go and shoveled them into his enormous mouth.
"By goggles!" he cried. "This stuff is making snozcumbers taste like swatchwallop."
The Queen glanced up, frowning. Mr. Tibbs looked down at his toes, and his lips moved in silent prayer.
"That was only one titchy little bite," the BFG said. "Is you having any more of this delunctious grubble in your cupboard, Magister?"
"Tibbs," the Queen said, showing true regal hospitality, "fetch the gentleman another 12 fried eggs and 12 sausages."
Mr. Tibbs swam out of the room, muttering unspeakable words to himself and wiping his brow with a white handkerchief. The BFG lifted the huge jug and took a swallow.
"Ugh!" he cried, blowing a mouthful across the ballroom. "Please, what is this horrible swig pill I is drinking, Magister?"
"It is coffee," the Queen told him, "freshly roasted."
"It's fulsome," the BFG cried out. "Where is the frobscottle?"
"The what?"
the Queen asked.
"Delumptious fizzy frobscottle," the BFG answered. "Everyone must be drinking frobscottle with breakfast, Magister. Then we can all be whiz-popping happily together afterwards."
"What does he mean?" the Queen said, frowning at Sophie. "What is whiz-popping?"
Sophie kept a very straight face.
"BFG," she said, "there is no frobscottle here, and whiz-popping is strictly forbidden."
"What?" cried the BFG. "No frobscottle, no whiz-popping, no glumptious music, no boom-boom-boom?"
"Absolutely not," Sophie told him firmly.
If he wants to sing, please don't stop him, the Queen said.
He doesn't want to sing, Sophie said.
He says he wants to make music, the Queen went on. Shall I send for a violin?
No, Your Majesty, Sophie said. He's only joking. A sly little smile crossed the BFG's face.
Listen, he said, peering down at Sophie. If they isn't having any Frobscottle here in the palace, I can still go whiz-popping perfectly well without it if I's trying hard enough.
No, cried Sophie. Don't. You're not to. I beg you.
Music is very good for the digestion, the Queen said. When I'm up in Scotland, they play the bagpipes outside the window while I'm eating. Do play something.
I has Her Majesty's permission, cried the BFG, and all at once he let fly with a whiz-popper that sounded as though a bomb had exploded in the room. The Queen jumped.
Whoopee! Shouted the BFG. That is better than bagpipes, is it not, Magister?
It took the Queen a few seconds to get over the shock.
I prefer the bagpipes, she said,
but she couldn't stop herself smiling. During the next 20 minutes, a whole relay of footmen were kept busy, hurrying to and from the kitchen, carrying third helpings and fourth helpings and fifth helpings of fried eggs and sausages for the ravenous and delighted BFG. When the BFG had consumed his 72nd fried egg, Mr. Tibbs sidled up to the Queen. He bent low from the waist and whispered in her ear.
Chef sends his apologies, Your Majesty, and he says he has no more eggs in the kitchen.
What's wrong with the hens?
The Queen said.
Nothing's wrong with the hens, Your Majesty, Mr. Tibbs whispered.
Then tell them to lay more, the Queen said.
She looked up at the BFG.
You have some toast and marmalade while you're waiting, she said to him.
The toast is finished, Mr. Tibbs whispered, and Chef says there is no more bread.
Tell him to bake more, the Queen said.
While all this was going on, Sophie had been telling the Queen everything, absolutely everything, about her visit to Giant Country. The Queen listened, appalled. When Sophie had finished, the Queen looked up at the BFG, who was sitting high above her. He was now eating a sponge cake.
"Big friendly giant," she said. "Last night those man-eating brutes came to England. Can you remember where they went the night before?"
The BFG put a whole round sponge cake into his mouth and chewed it slowly while he thought about this question.
"Yes, Magister," he said. "I do think I is remembering where they said they was going the night before last. They was galloping off to Sweden for the Sweden sour taste."
"Fetch me a telephone,"
the Queen commanded. Mr. Tibbs placed the instrument on the table. The Queen lifted the receiver.
"Get me the King of Sweden," she said. "Good morning," the Queen said. "Is everything all right in Sweden?"
"Everything is terrible,"
the King of Sweden answered.
"There's panic in the capital. 2 nights ago, 26 of my loyal subjects disappeared. My whole country is in a panic."
"Your 26 loyal subjects were all eaten by giants," the Queen said. "Apparently, they like the taste of Swedes."
"Why do they like the taste of Swedes?"
the King asked.
"Because the Swedes of Sweden have a sweet and sour taste, so says the BFG," the Queen said.
"I don't know what you're talking about,"
the King said, growing testy.
"It's hardly a joking matter when one's loyal subjects are being eaten like popcorn."
"They've eaten mine as well," the Queen said.
"Who's they, for heaven's sake?"
the King asked.
"Giants,"
the Queen said.
"Look here," the King said. "Are you feeling all right?"
"It's been a rough morning," the Queen said. "First I had a horrid nightmare, then the maid dropped my breakfast, and now I've got a giant on the piano."
"You need a doctor, quick!" cried the King.
I'll be all right," the Queen said. "I must go now. Thanks for your help."
She replaced the receiver.
"Your BFG is right," the Queen said to Sophie. "Those 9 man-eating brutes did go to Sweden."
"It's horrible," Sophie said. "Please stop them, Your Majesty."
"I'd like to make one more check before I call out the troops," the Queen said. Once more, she looked up at the BFG. He was eating doughnuts now, popping them into his mouth 10 at a time, like peas.
"Think hard, BFG," she said. "Where did those horrid giants say they were galloping off to 3 nights ago?"
The BFG thought long and hard.
"Ho, ho!" he cried at last. "Yes, I is remembering."
"Well?"
asked the Queen.
"One was off to Baghdad," the BFG said. "As they is galloping past my cave, Fleshlump Eater is waving his arms and shouting at me, 'Hoy is off to Baghdad, and I is going to Baghdad and Mum and every one of their 10 children as well.'"
Once more, the Queen lifted the receiver.
"Get me the Lord Mayor of Baghdad," she said. "If they don't have a Lord Mayor, get me the next best thing."
In 5 seconds, a voice was on the line.
"Here is the Sultan of Baghdad speaking," the voice said.
"Listen, Sultan," the Queen said. "Did anything unpleasant happen in your city 3 nights ago?"
"Every night unpleasant things are happening in Baghdad," the Sultan said. "We are chopping off people's heads like you are chopping parsley."
"I have never chopped parsley in my life," the Queen said. "I want to know if anyone has disappeared recently in Baghdad."
"Only my uncle, Caliph Harun al-Rashid," the Sultan said. "He disappeared from his bed 3 nights ago, together with his wife and 10 children.
"There you is," cried the BFG, whose wonderful ears enabled him to hear what the Sultan was saying to the Queen on the telephone. "Fleshlump Eater did that one. He went off to Baghdad and Mum and all the little kiddles."
The Queen replaced the receiver.
"That proves it," she said, looking up at the BFG. "Your story is apparently quite true. Summon the head of the army and the head of the Air Force. Immediately!"
The plan. The head of the army and the head of the Air Force stood at attention beside the Queen's breakfast table. Sophie was still in her seat, and the BFG was still high up on his crazy perch. It took the Queen only 5 minutes to explain the situation to the military men.
"I knew there was something like this going on, Your Majesty," the head of the army said. "For the last 10 years, we've been getting reports from nearly every country in the world about people disappearing mysteriously in the night. We had one only the other day from Panama."
"For the hearty taste," cried the BFG.
"And one from Wellington in New Zealand," said the head of the army.
"For the booty flavor," cried the BFG.
"What is he talking about?" said the head of the Air Force.
"Work it out for yourself," the Queen said. "What time is it?" 10 a.m.
"In 8 hours, those 9 bloodthirsty brutes will be galloping off to gobble up another couple of dozen unfortunate wretches. They have to be stopped. We must act fast."
"We'll bomb the blighters," shouted the head of the Air Force. "We'll mow them down with machine guns," cried the head of the army.
"I do not approve of murder," the Queen said.
"But they are murderers themselves," cried the head of the army.
"That is no reason why we should follow their example," the Queen said. "Two wrongs don't make a right."
"And 2 rights don't make a left," cried the BFG.
"We must bring them back alive," the Queen said.
"How?" the 2 military men said together. "They are all 50 feet high. They'd knock us down like ninepins." "Wait," cried the BFG. "Hold your horseflies. Keep your skirts on. I think I has the answer to the maiden's hair."
"Let him speak," the Queen said.
"Every afternoon," the BFG said, "all these giants is in the land of Nadi."
"I can't understand a word this fellow says," the head of the army snapped. "Why doesn't he speak clearly?"
"He means the land of Nod," Sophie said. "It's pretty obvious."
"Exactly,"
cried the BFG. Every afternoon, all these nine giants is lying on the ground, snoozling away in a very deep sleep. They is always resting like that before they is galloping off to guzzle another helping of human beings.
Go on, they said.
So what? So what you soldiers has to do is to creep up to the giants while they are still in the land of Noddy and tie their arms and legs with mighty ropes and wonking chains.
Brilliant, the Queen said.
That's all very well, said the head of the army, but how do we get the brutes back here? We can't load 50-foot giants onto trucks. Shoot 'em on the spot, that's what I say.
The BFG looked down from his lofty perch and said, this time to the head of the Air Force,
you is having belly poppers, is you not?
Is he being rude? The head of the Air Force said.
He means helicopters, Sophie told him.
Then why doesn't he say so? Of course we have helicopters.
Whoopsie big belly poppers, asked the BFG.
Very big ones, the head of the Air Force said proudly. But no helicopter is big enough to get a giant like that inside it.
You do not put him inside, the BFG said. You sling him underneath the belly of your belly popper and carry him like a torpedo.
Like a what? Said the head of the Air Force.
Like a torpedo, Sophie said.
Could you do that, Air Marshal? The Queen asked.
Well, I suppose we could, the head of the Air Force admitted grudgingly.
Then get cracking, the Queen said. You'll need nine helicopters, one for each giant.
Where is this place? The Air Force man said to the BFG. I presume you can pinpoint it on the map.
Pinpoint? Said the BFG.
Map? I was never hearing these words before. Is this Air Force been talking slushbungle?
The Air Marshal's face turned the colour of a ripe plum. He was not used to being told he was talking slushbungle. The Queen, with her usual admirable tact and good sense, came to the rescue.
BFG, she said, can you tell us more or less where this giant country is?
No, Magister, the BFG said, not on my Nelly. Then we're jiggled, cried the Army General. This is ridiculous, cried the Air Marshal. You must not be given up so easy, the BFG said calmly. The first titchy bobstickle you meet, and you begin shouting you is biff-squiggled.
The Army General was no more used to being insulted than the Air Marshal. His face began to swell with fury, and his cheeks blew out until they looked like two huge ripe tomatoes.
Your Majesty, he cried, we are dealing with a lunatic. I want nothing more to do with this ridiculous operation.
The Queen, who was used to the tantrums of her senior officials, ignored him completely.
BFG, she said, would you please tell these rather dim-witted characters exactly what to do?
A pleasure, Magister, said the BFG. Now listen to me carefully, you two boot-bogglers.
The military men began to twitch, but they stayed put.
I is not having the foggiest idea where giant country is in the world, the BFG said, but I is always able to gallop there. I is galloping forthwards and backwards from giant country every night to blow my dreams into little chiddlers' bedrooms. I is knowing the way very well, so all you is having to do is this. Put your nine big belly hoppers up in the air and let them follow me as I is galloping along.
How long will the journey take? The Queen asked.
If we is leaving now, the BFG said, we will be arriving just as the giants is having their afternoon snozzle.
Splendid, said the Queen,
then turning to the two military men. She said,
prepare to leave immediately.
The head of the army, who was feeling pretty miffed by the whole business, said,
that's all very well, Your Majesty, but what are we going to do with the blighters once we've got them back?
Don't you worry about that, the Queen told him. We'll be ready for them. Hurry up now. Off you go.
If it pleases your Majesty, Sophie said, I should like to ride with the BFG to keep him company.
Where will you sit? Asked the Queen.
In his ear, Sophie said. Show them, BFG.
The BFG got down from his high chair. He picked Sophie up in his fingers.
He swiveled his huge right ear until it was parallel with the ground. Then he placed Sophie gently inside it. The heads of the army and the air force stood there goggling. The Queen smiled.
"You really are rather a wonderful giant," she said.
"Magister," the BFG said, "I is wishing to ask a very special thing from you."
"What is it?"
the Queen said. "Could I please bring back here in the belly poppers all my collection of dreams? They is taking me years and years to collect, and I is not wanting to lose them."
"Why, of course," the Queen said. "I wish you a safe journey."
Capture. The BFG had made thousands of journeys to and from Giant Country over the years, but he had never in his life made one quite like this, with nine huge helicopters roaring along just over his head. He had never before travelled in broad daylight either. He hadn't dared to. But this was different. Now he was doing it for the Queen of England herself, and he was frightened of nobody. As he galloped across the British Isles with the helicopters thundering above him, people stood and gaped and wondered what on earth was going on. They had never seen the likes of it before, and they never would again. Every now and then, the pilots of the helicopters would catch a glimpse of a small girl wearing glasses, crouching in the giant's right ear and waving to them. They always waved back. The pilots marveled at the giant's speed and at the way he leapt across wide rivers and over huge houses. But they hadn't seen anything yet.
"Be careful to hang on tight," the BFG said. "We is going fast as a fizzle crump."
The BFG changed into his famous top gear, and all at once he began to fly forward as though there were springs in his legs and rockets in his toes. He went skimming over the earth like some magical hop, skip and jumper, with his feet hardly ever touching the ground. As usual, Sophie had to crouch low in the crevice of his ear to save herself from being swept clean away. The nine pilots in their helicopters suddenly realized they were being left behind. The giant was streaking ahead. They opened their throttles to full speed, and even then they were only just able to keep up. In the leading machine, the head of the Air Force was sitting beside the pilot. He had a world atlas on his knees, and he kept staring at the atlas, then at the ground below, trying to figure out where they were going. Frantically, he turned the pages of the atlas.
"Where the devil are we going?" he cried.
"I haven't the foggiest idea," the pilot answered. "The Queen's orders were to follow the giant, and that's exactly what I'm doing." The pilot was a young Air Force officer with a bushy moustache. He was very proud of his moustache. He was also quite fearless, and he loved adventure. He thought this was a super adventure. "It's fun going to new places," he said.
"New places?" shouted the head of the Air Force. "What the blazes do you mean, new places?"
"This place we're flying over now isn't in the Atlas, is it?" the pilot said, grinning.
"You're darn right it isn't in the Atlas," cried the head of the Air Force. "We've flown clear off the last page."
"I expect that old giant knows where he's going," the young pilot said.
"He's leading us to disaster," cried the head of the Air Force. He was shaking with fear.
In the seat behind him sat the head of the army, who was even more terrified.
"You don't mean to tell me we've gone right out of the Atlas?" he cried, leaning forward to look. "That's exactly what I am telling you," cried the Air Force man. "Look for yourself. Here's the very last map in the whole flaming Atlas. We went off that over an hour ago."
He turned the page. As in all atlases, there were two completely blank pages at the very end.
"So now we must be somewhere here," he said,
putting a finger on one of the blank pages.
"Where's here?" cried the head of the army.
The young pilot was still grinning broadly. He said to them,
"That's why they always put two blank pages at the back of the atlas. They're for new countries. You're meant to fill them in yourself."
The head of the Air Force glanced down at the ground below.
"Just look at this godforsaken desert," he cried. "All the trees are dead and all the rocks are blue."
"The giant has stopped," the young pilot said. "He's waving us down."
The pilots throttled back the engines, and all 9 helicopters landed safely on the great yellow wasteland. Then each of them lowered a ramp from its belly. 9 jeeps, one from each helicopter, were driven down the ramps. Each jeep contained 6 soldiers and a vast quantity of thick rope and heavy chains.
"I don't see any giants," the head of the army said. "The giants is all just out of sight over there," the BFG told him. "But if you is taking these swashbuckling noisy